Dear Dhamma friends, we are going to start the sutta teaching session. So here we are discussing various suttas related to our practice. And now we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as Digha Nikaya. So in the Majjhima Nikaya section, it is actually somewhat short, because the Dhammanupassana section has actually 5 categories, and under that we have the 4 Noble Truths, and 4 Noble Truths are mentioned in brief. But in the Digha Nikaya section, Satipatthana Sutta is fairly long, because that section, the 4 Noble Truths are explained in detail. Now that is the only difference. Other than that, everything is very similar. Other than that, Satipatthana being discussed in many other suttas, and altogether they were collected and prepared as Sanyutta Nikaya, Satipatthana Sanyutta. That is where so many suttas are discussing Satipatthana is categorized, collected as one section. Now we are going through Satipatthana one after the other. So basically there are 4 Satipatthanas Buddha discussing, explaining, namely Kayanupassana, the mindfulness about the body; Vedanupassana, the mindfulness about feelings; Chittanupassana, mindfulness about the mind; Dhammanupassana, mindfulness about various phenomena. Now we are going one after the other, and here one important thing is all the Satipatthanas have to be practiced as a direct experience. It is not that we are trying to imagine things or to fantasize things, proliferate things, or to read from a book, listen to Dhamma. So that is not Satipatthana. Satipatthana is where we have to directly know things, directly be aware of things, directly experience things. So that is the exact difference. So there are many ways to learn some teaching. Say for example, by hearing, by studying, by going to someone else's speech. So likewise, there are many ways of learning the Dhamma, as well as any other kind of a teaching. But here the important thing is, we may have to learn from the Buddha's teaching, but we have to apply it to ourselves. That is the only way to directly know Satipatthana. So in the Kayanupassana section, Buddha say, "Ida bhikkave bhikkhu kaye kayanupassi viharati ātāpi sampajāno satimā vinayya loke abhijjā domanassam." That basically means the bhikkhu in this sāsana, in this dispensation of the Buddha, so he stay or he live paying attention to the body. At the beginning he may perceive it as his body, but later slowly, so that possessiveness may slowly reduce, slowly disappear, and very beautiful emergence happens about the Dhamma, about the wisdom. Now we may start thinking that I am meditating, I am walking, I am sitting, I am lying down. Likewise, we are interpreting it in terms of a person, in terms of an individual. But later, that individual, that person, that eye-making, that mind-making slowly dissipate, slowly disappear, and a very beautiful flow of Dhamma going to happen. Now we have discussed Kayanupassana, so there are Buddha categorically mentions that to each and every Anupassana, to each and every method, we have to maintain some sort of a background in our mind in order to develop Satipatthana. It is not that simply we are doing it for the sake of doing, but rather we have to maintain some appropriate environment in our mind. So that is what mentioned as ātāpi sampajāno satimā vinayya loke abhijjā domanassā. Literally means that we have to maintain an ardent effort, because otherwise there may be various hindrances coming up, various obstacles coming on our way. So in order to face them, in order to overcome them, we should have fair amount of energy, fair amount of effort. Again, this practice takes long time, so we have to have kind of a perseverance in order to continue our practice. And again, when we are actually involved in the practice, we have to maintain a balanced effort, because otherwise if we put too much effort, excess effort, that also is not the appropriate way. So likewise, there's a significant involvement of the effort in this context. Now, the other point is Satima, that is where we have to be really mindful about the present moment, and that present moment observation is one of the key features in Satipatthana. And just after the establishment of mindfulness, then Buddha says, Sampajano, that is where we should clearly know what is under our scrutiny. It is not that we simply have to glance at the surface, rather we have to penetrate, we have to see what is really going on, and then only we are able to understand the intrinsic behavior of each and every phenomena. So therefore this clear knowing or clear comprehension is very important. So that is emphasized with the term Sampajano. And then Vinaya Loke Abhijja Domanasam, so that means, so while engaged in this practice as much as possible, we have to maintain a kind of an equanimous mind, a balanced mind, not attached to so many things, not aversing or not rejecting, not resisting any other thing. So we have to maintain a kind of a balanced, equanimous mind, not attached and not rejecting. So if we are able to maintain such a environment in the mind, such a mindset, so then practicing of Satipatthana may be little easy. Actually, the Satipatthana itself takes us to deeper understanding and helps to maintain this environment as much as possible. Now, under the Kayanupassana section, we discussed about Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, and then Iriyapata, mindfulness on various postures, Sampajanya, that is mindfulness on various daily activities. We can say sub-postures. So everywhere we can see, so Buddha is using this very body to improve mindfulness, improve wisdom, improve concentration, collectedness of the mind. So once we are succeeding, we can say more and more our mind starts to be with the body. It is not that we are being constantly distracted. Rather, if it is necessary, we can maintain our attention within the body. Typically, we don't have that kind of a skill before we develop Satipatthana. That is why Satipatthana helps us to develop that skill, so that our mind, our attention will stay within the body as much as possible. So this is, in a way, we can say as a one strategy Buddha is using, because otherwise mind simply distracts, simply start to ruminate and wander here and there. So that such a scattered mind, confused mind, distracted mind is not capable of understanding Buddha's teaching, understanding what is really going on. So that is why it is necessary to have a fairly concentrated, well-developed attitude, well-developed focused attitude. So that actually helps to understand the reality. And assume that one is able to develop such a concentration, such a focus. So at that time, there's a possibility that he is feeling various types of feelings. Now, Kayanupassana section is the beginning, we can say, and once we are continuing our practice, slowly as we develop our faculties, so the practice itself taking us to the other sections as well. Say for example, if one begins with Anapanasati, assume that he is maintaining his attention at his nostrils. So he is able to understand when breathing in happens, when inhale happens, and when exhale happens, he can understand, he can recognize. So assume that he is continuing like this. More and more he is trying to keep his attention in the breathing. As a result, his mindfulness improves, his attention improves. Now, as a result, his concentration also improves. Now he can maintain his attention for a long time closer to the nostril. Actually, Anapanasati itself can lead to further development of attention for the development of mindfulness, not only in the kayanupassana, in the body, various material characteristics, but even towards the feelings. So they are in the Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha says, Piti Patisangvedi Asasi Samiti Sikkati, Sukha Patisangvedi Asasi Samiti Sikkati. That indicates that now, after the calming down of the breath, now the body is going through a fair amount of happiness, various pleasurable feelings, sort of floating kind of experiences. So all these are manifestation of Sukha Vedana, happy feelings. So typically our approach is to grasp or cling to happy feelings, but rather here Buddha encourages us to look at them objectively. Step back and look at these various happy feelings objectively. Assume the body has various minor painful feelings. Without trying to immediately reject them or to get rid of them, so the advice here is to look at them objectively using the already developed concentration, already developed focus. More we engage such kind of an practice, our focus also further improves. Our clear comprehension, clear knowing also further improves because of this practice. That is, the Vedananupassana actually leads to further development of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Because one has to clearly know each and every pain, each and every pleasure, or even any other equanimous feeling arising throughout the body. Now we can understand there are three types of feelings. Primarily, we can say Sukha Vedana, the happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, Dukkha Vedana, painful feelings, Adukkama Sukha Vedana, neither painful nor happy feelings or equanimous feelings. So these are the most prominent types of feelings that we can accommodate. So at any given time, our body and the mind may be going through any of these three kinds of feelings. So when happy feeling is there, we can say the other two are absent. When painful feeling is there, we can say the happy feeling and the equanimous feeling is absent. When equanimous feelings are there, we can say happy feelings and painful feelings are absent. So if we are able to observe again and again all these types of different feelings arising, then we can say at a given time only one type of feeling is there. And it also arises, and after a while it goes away. Now after that, another type of feeling may arise. And again, we don't have any control which feeling, which type of feeling going to happen. So likewise, we can continue our practice more and more understanding, recognizing various types of feelings. Now, these feelings Buddha further categorize into two other categories, groups, called Samisa and Niramisa. Samisa means worldly types of feelings. Niramisa means unworldly types of feelings. Say for example, you are engaged with mindfulness practice and assume that you are going through a walking session. So your steps are touching the ground and you are able to recognize various types of element characteristics, hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, heat, cold, and all these types of various characteristics you can recognize. And after a while, as you are continuing, probably you can look at all these as neutral feelings, because most of the time they are very equanimous neutral feelings. So without going to in detail recognition of element characteristics, there's a possibility that automatically mind tends towards the recognition of various types of feelings. Now you are experiencing various types of feelings, and that is, you can be aware for a long time. More you are aware, your clear comprehension also improves. And these we can say, not very much a kind of a samisa, worldly kind of a feeling, but it's a niramisa, where it is not much engaged with various pleasurable or painful or equanimous feelings coming from mundane type of activity, but this is a kind of a spiritual kind of activity is there. So with that you are experiencing kind of a නිරාමිස උපේක්ඛා වේදනා. Unworldly kind of equanimous feeling. Similarly, suppose you are engaged with further practice and sometimes your whole body appear like very lighter, feeling like floating, blissful, or any kind of very pleasurable feelings are there. So at that time, these kind of pleasurable feelings are not derived from various sensual pleasures like seeing something, hearing something, sensing something, various sense objects. It is not so. Rather, this whole pleasurable feelings are, we can say, kind of an outcome of our spiritual practice. So these pleasurable feelings are also, we can say, niramisa sukha vedana, unworldly kind of pleasurable feelings. And assume that you want to become someone, you want to become an arahant, you want to become a sotapanna, you want to have kind of a samadhi, you want to have kind of a panya, wisdom. But at the moment you don't have. So as a result, you might have a kind of a little unpleasant feeling in the mind. So that also we can say is not very much related to the mundane kind of worldly pleasures, worldly kind of activity, but it is related to something spiritual. So that is also called niramisa dukkha vedana, unworldly kind of unhappiness, we can say. So that is also there. So likewise, we can understand what are these niramisa vedana. So three categories: niramisa dukkha vedana, niramisa sukha vedana, niramisa upekkha vedana. So it is obvious how what are the samisa sukha vedana, samisa dukkha vedana, samisa upekkha vedana, because samisa means worldly kind of happiness, worldly kind of pain. So that is fairly obvious. Assume that you are going through sort of illness. Due to that, assume that your body is painful, so that we can say kind of a samisa dukkha vedana. And again, assume that you are having delicious food, and at that time you are feeling lot of pleasurable feelings. So that is, we can say, samisa pleasurable feelings, samisa sukha vedana. Now, as we are continuing, Buddha says there is a possibility certain types of feelings generating latent tendencies. So that is another area that we need to look into, that when we are going through typical samisa sukha vedana, that means worldly kind of happiness, when you are going through, there's a tendency that we get attached to it, we are grasping it, and as a result, our raga anusaya, latent tendency of lust, going to be developed. On the other hand, assume that we are going through some painful feeling, and typical worldly painful feeling, at that time we are crying, weeping, rejecting, hating others, cursing, so likewise many mental agony is going on. So as a result, Buddha says, one is further enhancing, improving one's patigahanusaya, that is the latent tendency of hatred. And at the same time, suppose we are going to sort of a neutral feeling, so at that time we are ignorant about it, we are careless about it, we don't recognize it, we simply ignore it, we are in search of some pleasurable feeling because this neutral feeling appears very boring. Now Buddha says at that time we are encouraging ignorance, because ignorance is the outcome of that kind of unknown type of situation where we are going through some sort of a neutral feeling, but we are completely unaware of it, or we are trying to reject it and to jump or cling to something pleasurable. So therefore, when we are going through some pleasurable worldly feeling, when we are grasping it, we are accumulating or improving, increasing raga anusaya. When we are going through some painful feeling and we are rejecting it, crying, weeping, resisting, all sorts of rejection are there, So there we are encouraging patigahanusaya. Again, when the body or the mind going through some neutral feeling and we are unaware of it, we can't feel it, we simply ignore it. So there we are encouraging ignorance or avijjanusaya. But on the other hand, when we are going through some niramisa sukha vedana, unworldly kind of pleasurable feeling, Buddha says, it does not contribute towards the raga anusaya. Similarly, when we go through some unworldly kind of painful feeling, it does not encourage, it does not produce patigaha anusaya. Again, when we are going through some neutral feeling, which is related to the spiritual side, niramisa, unworldly type, that also does not contribute towards the avijja anusaya. Say for example, someone is in the fourth jhana, it is fairly equanimous. Or someone is in some sort of a vipassana. Mostly vipassana is tending towards, taking towards us to upekkha. So all these upekkha vedana, equanimous feelings, does not contribute towards the ignorance. So these are some important facts that we can keep in mind. So unknowingly, if we are going through any kind of promotion of hatred, delusion, or lust, so that has a resultant contribution towards our latent tendencies. So that is where we understanding these various feelings is extremely important, because otherwise unknowingly we are feeding our latent tendencies. In a way, assume that one is going through some illness, some sort of a mental agony, displeasure. But when we are adding to it, when we are resisting it rather than accepting it, rather than trying to understand it, when we are rejecting it, so that actually has an adverse effect and contributes towards the patigaha anusaya. So therefore we have to be careful on how to handle these various types of vedana feelings, and that is how vedana anupassana becomes very interesting and very important practice. In the vedana anupassana, all these different types of feelings we are trying to look at objectively. We are not considering them as my painful feeling, my happy feeling, my equanimous feeling. Rather, we are observing them objectively. There is happy feeling, there is painful feeling, there is unhappy feeling, or there is equanimous feeling. So this approach is extremely important. So whenever any kind of a feeling arises, so we should be able to step back and watch it or look at it, observe it carefully. So at the beginning, a yogi might not have this kind of a ability, because typically our mind go and immediately grasp whenever a pleasurable feeling arises. Whenever a painful feeling arises, immediately we want to get rid of it. So this, therefore the approach has to be developed, the skill has to be developed from the kayanupassana, that is the easiest way. There are, say for example, when breathing happens, we know there is inhale. When breathing out happens, we know there is an outhale or the exhale. Now, we can observe it. This observing mind is one thing, the phenomenon, incident is another thing. There are actually the physical characteristics is there and we can observe it. Similarly, when we apply the same principle to Vedana, there is a painful feeling and we can observe it. Painful feeling is one thing, observing mind is another thing. Similarly, a pleasurable feeling is one thing, observing mind is another thing. Equanimous feeling is one thing, observing mind is another thing. So this kind of a disengaged observation is very important. So this is how Buddha says, Vedanasu Vedananupassi Viharati. So here also, Atapi Sampajano Satima Viniya Loke Abhijja Domanasan. So we have to maintain ardent effort, because otherwise assume that we are going through some painful feelings. At that time, we should not immediately get up or try to reject it or have any kind of resistance in the mind. As much as possible, we should be able to patiently observe it. So that patient endurance is very important. Therefore, the atapi, the ardent effort is also there. And again, we have to be mindful on the presently arising feelings at that very moment. Any given time, various types of feelings are arising, and we should be able to immediately observe it. Our mind has to be well focused to that. And then and there, whenever Vedana arise, feeling arise, so we should be able to immediately watch it. So the Satima, the mindfulness, is there. And this mere observation is not enough. Once good mindfulness has established, unwavering mindfulness has established, now we have to carefully see the details of the Vedana. It is not that a single feeling is there, so more we closely observe it, there we might be able to understand it's a kind of a group of feelings, kind of a conglomeration of feelings are there. Each minute feeling has its own lifetime, very short lifetime, and then another minute feeling going to arise, and again it also has very short lifetime. So therefore we can say it's a kind of a group of feelings, minute feelings, all together appear like a pleasurable feeling, appear like a painful feeling, appear like a neutral feeling. For this actually Buddha say a very beautiful simile that is also important to understand. And assume that there's a rain happen, and a raindrop hits the water. At that time there's a water bubble arising, and immediately it bursts. Assume there's another raindrop drops or hits the water. As a result, a water bubble arises, and again it bursts. Assume now heavy rain happens. So very quickly, thousands of water, this raindrops are hitting the water surface, and there are so many water bubbles are arising and immediately bursting. So you can see, you can understand the kind of a situation. There's a rapid arising and bursting of these water bubbles. So Buddha says, Vedana Bubbulupama. So this feeling is very much like these kind of water bubbles. They are very transient. Immediately they arise and immediately they pass away. Immediately they burst. So when we are closely observing various feelings, most of the time, this kind of situation is possible to understand. Immediately, it is not possible because our attention, our focus, clear comprehension is not improved. But more and more we are continuing our practice, as our mindfulness refined, as our clear comprehension improved, then we are able to recognize this kind of a situation where each and every minute feeling is very much like that water bubble. Quickly arise and then immediately passes away. So these many minute types of feelings all together show or appear like a single pleasurable feeling, single painful feeling, single equanimous feeling, but actually it is not a single painful feeling or pleasurable feeling, but a group of minute feelings are there, and they are extremely vulnerable, extremely transient. They quickly arise and passes away. So this is something that one can recognize, one can experience during Vedana Anupassana. So the first stage, we can say, therefore, the establishment of mindfulness on feelings, Satipatthana. And the understanding of their behavior, how these minute feelings are behaving, is the second section. That is where Satipatthana Bhavana, seeing samudaya dhammanupassīva vedanāsu viharati, vaya dhammanupassīva vedanāsu viharati. Samudaya vaya dhammanupassīva vedanāsu viharati. One understand these all types of, different types of feelings have the nature to arise and have the nature to pass away. So, and again, we can recognize even the pleasurable feelings are subjected to this kind of arising and passing away process. It is not only the painful feeling or equanimous feeling, but even the pleasurable feelings have the same nature. Even though we interpret as a pleasurable feeling, But actually, internally, what is available there is a rapid succession of arising and passing away, a series of minute types of feelings arising and passing away. So therefore, we can say even the pleasurable feeling is unsatisfactory because there are continuous arising and passing away or continuous changes there. Yadanichang tandukham. Therefore, Buddha says, whatever it is impermanent, transient, therefore it is unsatisfactory. You can't expect lasting happiness from a, this kind of a situation. Assume that you like certain pleasurable feeling, but internally what is contributing to this pleasurable feeling is extremely vulnerable, extremely transient. So therefore you can't expect lasting happiness from this situation. So if one is able to understand this situation, so then mind further avoid grasping, avoid identifying with all these feelings. Rather, now mind has the capacity to watch them distantly or watch them objectively, because now there is no attachment, there is no grasping, there is no rejection, there is no resentment, so there is no ignorance. Rather, one is aware, fully aware of what is happening, but not grasping. And again, there is no mental resistance either when there are painful feelings. So one is now capable of observing many types of feelings objectively. Distant observation becomes one's skill. Suppose one is continuing this practice. Now, he is not afraid of pleasurable feelings, he is not afraid of painful feelings, he is not afraid of equanimous feelings, but rather now feelings are his teacher. Whenever feelings are there, he can recognize them, understand them, and contributes towards the wisdom. Now we are in the Atipatthana Bhavana, where we are understanding various types of feelings as well as we understand the behavior of them. More we understand, more will be the wisdom. We understand the impermanent nature, we understand the unsatisfactoriness, and again we understand how ungovernable they are. They are not working or arising according to my wish, according to my likes and dislikes. Rather, they are working on their own agenda. So kind of a disenchantment arises, kind of a dispassion arises, and now even though any kind of feeling is there, the practitioner has the capacity, has the skill to distantly observing without getting attached to any of these feelings. So more and more one continues like this, now probably even he can't recognize, distinguish whether it is a pleasurable feeling or painful feeling or an equanimous feeling, because everything appears like a flux, like an energy, everything arising and passing away like a flux, utterly transient, and it is very rapid. So one can't understand what exactly is the type of feeling. So it is not necessary to understand that. Rather, now the practice becomes further simplified, and everything is arising and passing away, and practitioner is maintaining some dispassion, disenchantment, and unassociated kind of an observation. As one is further continuing one's practice, so mind may further improve in dispassion, non-grasping, unattachment kind of qualities, and ultimately there's a possibility mind completely become released, free from all these feelings. At that time, if mind does not attach to any kind of bodily sensation, any kind of bodily characteristics, feeling, or any mind state, then we can say the mind is temporarily free. But unfortunately, due to various internal influxes, pains, again mind go and attach. So one anyway can maintain that freedom for a short period. Now, if one is continuing again and again this sort of a practice, one experiences this freedom again and again. So it is a repeatable, it is a achievable task if one is continuing one's practice. Now the advice is to continue one's practice more and more so that this freedom is prolonged. So one may recognize that one needs kind of a morality to continue this, because otherwise the grasping is very high. If one maintains good morality, then one is well protected and one's already developed qualities may last long. Those qualities may be protected. But if one doesn't maintain good morality, discipline, it's very difficult to maintain these understandings, wisdom, and even the concentrations. So the need of a moral code or morality restrainment becomes evident. And it is of course necessary, the concentration, samadhi also necessary. And development of the wisdom becomes the goal, because more and more wisdom is required in order to avoid any kind of grasping. So this sila samadhi panya becomes evident as the necessary factors, necessary requirements, skills that one needs to develop. So there Buddha recommends, okay, you need to develop Noble Eightfold Path, and one enters to this path, understand the value of this path by his own practice. It is not from a book, rather through his own practice he now understands it is necessary to maintain good sila, necessary to have the necessary amount of concentration, and again has to develop wisdom. So the Noble Eightfold Path also come into the picture. Now this is the way we can say the complete three stages we can recognize in this Vedananupassana. And I like to draw your attention to another point which we can derive from Vedananupassana, that is to the dependent origination. Paticchasamuppada or idappacceta. Because as you know, feeling is not something that arises out of reason, but it has a cause, it has a reason. So that is Buddha say, passa paccaya vedana. Because of the contact, feeling arises. Whenever a contact happens which is conducive to generate pleasurable feeling, then the pleasurable feeling arises. When a contact happens which is conducive to generate painful feeling, then the painful feeling happens. Painful feeling arises. When a contact happens which is conducive of producing equanimous feeling, then the equanimous feeling arises. So therefore we can say, without a contact, feeling cannot arise. So all the different types of feelings happen due to this kind of contact. And if one try to understand this relationship, so that is kind of a refinement of one's understanding, one's wisdom, and there one can broaden one's understanding towards causality, towards cause and effect. Say for example, you are in the walking meditation, and when your left is up, not yet touched to the ground, you may feel kind of a lightness, kind of a equanimity. But when your foot touches the ground, immediately there is a gross feeling. So you can say, to this gross equanimous feeling, the contact is a must. So when your foot touches the ground, that generates contact, the foot go and contact with the ground, and immediately the feeling arises. So very in a simplified way we can understand, the contact causes feeling. On the other hand, suppose you are very closely observing various other feelings arising throughout the body. At that time also, we can recognize there's a very slight contact happens. As a result, any resultant feelings are arising. And Buddha here also gives a very interesting, easy to understand simile. There he says, during the good old days, there are two dry sticks used to rub each other in order to generate heat, and that heat being used to generate a kind of a kindle, generate fire. And Buddha says, if one stop this rubbing, then that generated heat may dissipate. So this heat is the outcome because of that contact, because of that continuous rubbing. But if we keep away those two sticks, dry sticks, so the already generated heat may dissipate, and there is no possibility of further rising of heat because we are not doing that rubbing, contact. Similarly, Buddha says, when there is a contact, feeling arises. When there is no more contact, already arisen feeling may dissipate, fade away, disappear, and therefore contact is the proximate cause for the feeling. And on the other hand, because of the feeling, craving can arise. Vedana paccaya tanha, that is the other link. Another easy to understand link that assume that you are going through some pleasurable feeling, and if you observe your mind, probably you can recognize there's a desire arising in the mind to have that pleasurable feeling, to experience more that pleasurable feeling, to grasp that pleasurable feeling. So there's a kind of a desire arise in the mind. Grasping happens in the mind. So if one understands how pleasurable feelings are causing this desire, causing this attachment, causing this grasping, so there one understand this is how we react. This is how we mentally react to various feelings. There's a kind of a causal relationship here, because of contact feeling arise, and if it is pleasurable, we want to have it. I want it more. I want to own it. I want to possess it. I want to have it tomorrow. So likewise, there's a desire going to arise. And desire further improves and we go and grasp. We are strongly attached to it. We are holding it. The upadana also happens. So likewise, one can understand how this feeling conditions the mental reaction, mental attraction, desire, grasping, and so on. So this is another stage one can use Vedana Anupassana to understand dependent origination. Because Vedana is fairly obvious when compared to contact or any other characteristics. The feelings are fairly obvious. So when feelings are arising, one can see what are they, what category of them. And there one can understand pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, neutral feelings, and how that also conditions towards other mental reactions and even towards various emotions. So therefore, feelings or observation of feelings is very, very important, fruitful area, very rich area for meditation. So therefore, some teachers specially give more prominence towards Vedana Anupassana, and they purposely observe the body to recognize various types of feelings. Because more and more understanding of feelings lead to understanding of impermanence, understanding of unsatisfactoriness, and understanding of non-self. So this is how we can say Vedana Anupassana is evolving. And Buddha says, if one develops like this, more and more dispassion arises, more and more engaged observation is possible, detached observation is possible, and as a result, mind starts to let go of feelings, let go of attachments, let go of grasping, and there's a possibility of generating a free mind, unattached mind, non-grasping mind, unconditioned mind. So therefore, it is a path towards the Nibbana, but one has to have a lot of perseverance, a lot of patience, in order to continue in this kind of practice. So I'd like to conclude today's sutta teaching with that note, and now I open the session for questions.
So if there are any new friends joining us, to ask questions, you may raise your hand, ask directly, or you may also send them via chat. So, Bhante, one of the questions that I have is, in order to attain path and fruition, do we necessarily need to cultivate all four kinds of satipatthana? And then, when does one go from practicing kaya nupassana to vedana nupassana?
Yeah, actually, there's a reference is there in the Satipatthana Sanyukta. There is a sutta called Padesa Sutta. So there, Venerable Ananda very precisely mentioned that in order to attain Sotapanna, mastering one type of Satipatthana is enough. And if one master all four, no problem at all. Therefore, one can say minimum means mastering one type of satipatthana if one has to succeed or successfully be in the sotapanna level, stream entry. But that's the Samanta Sutta, the next sutta mentions, in order to attain arhatship, one needs to have good understanding, one's own understanding about all four types of satipatthana. So therefore, even in the Vedanupassana, in order to recognize all types of feelings, one needs to practice all four types of satipatthana. But if one masters only Vedanupassana, it may be helpful to attain the first stage, and not only Vedanupassana, any other category, any other foundation is capable of making one a sotapanna, stream winner. And the next section is related to the how one may transfer or transit from Kayanupassana to Vedanupassana. This is very natural process. One may start with Kayanupassana and one may develop understanding various, say, element characteristics, rupa, and more one continues that practice. So, immediate kind of a obvious result or the inevitable result is one's improvement towards the Vedanupassana. And it is, there is no any kind of a rule telling that you definitely have to engage in Vedanupassana for long time. Rather, it depends on the yogi. So certain people take maximum benefit from Kayanupassana and make some benefit from Vedanupassana and other Anupassana. Some may take little benefit from Kayanupassana and switch to Vedanupassana very quickly and take lot of benefit from Vedanupassana. And some may spend some time in Kayanupassana, some time in Vedanupassana, and more time in Chittanupassana. So likewise, there are various differences among yogis. So anyway, the transition is quite natural. Yeah.
Thank you,
Bhante.
And then for the next question, I'd like to invite Indira to please ask.
Today's one, sir?
Yes.
I sat down for meditation and I was thinking of looking at my, watching my body and eating. And then suddenly, what I saw during daytime, that is, a child hugging a father and saying, I miss you, Daddy. Mm-hmm. So that came to my mind. And then I was happy because they had a bond. I was looking at it objectively. And then again I felt sad also because I was thinking how far this bond will be. And then I just, you know, there were another thoughts also came, and then, I mean, feelings came, and then I forgot about it. But I realized even in the dinner table, I mentioned this to my family. That means, although I have looked at it in objectively, I realized I had some sort of attachment to it. And then when I got up early morning also, this came to my mind. So how do you explain this, Swaminatha? It's with the Paticchasamuppada.
No, basically, I mean, this incident has some impact on your mind. So though you are looking at it objectively, there seems to be a kind of an impact on the mind, and you may start to think about it. And rather than simply stopping at the level of seeing, you are now sort of adding something to it, and you have certain emotions towards some incident, and they are now arising, and you are adding your own part, your own interpretation to this incident. But on the other hand, assume that to another person, if he simply see this incident, that's it. So he doesn't have any kind of a turmoil or any kind of a second thought in the mind. So that is another way. So many people, I mean, each one of us our own likes and dislikes, and depending on that, certain incidents trigger our emotions. But to another person, the same incident does not trigger their emotions. So therefore, in our practice, what we need to do is to recognize these emotions. recognize how we interpret, how we add our own likes and dislikes, our own interpretations to this incident. So that way we can stop proliferating. We can stop adding to it and keep the mind quiet, keep the mind still without being disturbed. So that is what I think we need to do, because I mean these things are, I mean not only this incident, there are so many incidents every day happens, and in a way they are the rich field for our practice. So when we see any kind of an incident, are we able to maintain unwavering mind, unshakable mind? Whether it is pleasurable or whether it is painful, are we able to maintain some good equanimity in our mind? So that is what very beautifully mentioned in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta. And again, it is not the ignorant kind of equanimity. Rather, one has to develop vipassana and has to recognize kind of a freedom of mind, free from any kind of an attachment, free from any association. So that freedom, that equanimity has to be maintained as much as possible. So that is our goal. But anyway, mind go and attach, mind go and start to tell a story, mind go and give a kind of interpretation. So that is the nature of the mind. So we honestly have to understand, okay, the mind again go and start to talk, again go and start kind of a rumination. So we need to honestly understand that and not to promote it, not to promote that proliferation, not to encourage that proliferation, rather recognize it and simply let it go. And calm down ourselves and again establish or re-establish in that equanimity. So that is how we need to continue our practice. Hope you understood. I mean, you have some experience in this as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Namoka to please ask your question.
Good morning, Bhante.
Yeah.
Bhante, the first question I have for you is, you just mentioned, you know, the Kaya Nupassana. So, I mean, I'm more used to the Mahasi method, so, you know, how they mindfully, you know, you do everything. But sometimes, say, I'm seated for a while, and then when I'm getting up, I'm mindful of getting up, and then there is painful feeling. So I'm aware of the feeling at the time. And then it might go to Chitta Anupassana and I think, oh, my body is hurting, you know. So when you do Kaya Anupassana, isn't it like picking up a stick? When you pick up one end, the other end also gets up, isn't it? Is that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a way of how we look at it. So at the beginning, various element characteristics become sort of obvious. So therefore, we are picking it in that angle. But as you said, it is the feeling is also there. But we are not giving prominence to it. So rather we are more interested about the details or the characteristics of the hardness, softness. So likewise we are more focused towards that direction. But slowly these characteristics become sort of less important, and now mind goes towards the kind of an equanimous feeling. It's a kind of a natural switch. But as you said, both are there. From the beginning, both were there. But we are not paying our attention to the feeling side. Rather, we have paid our attention to the element characteristic side, the rupa side. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, if I'm seated for a while and I get a painful feeling in my knee, I go visualize my knee. And I say painful, and obviously there is a tendency for how I hope it will leave, sort of, you know. There is that, and I'm aware of that.
So that attitude has to be slowly changed. Rather your attitude has to be when there is a say painful feeling, so you consider it as a kind of a resource for your practice. So rather than looking at it as an obstacle for your practice, you can say, okay, this is a resource for my practice, raw material for my practice. And now you, even without any kind of a naming, any kind of labeling, noting, you can simply keep your attention onto that painful feeling, and you start watching it with the undisturbed kind of observation is there, equanimous observation is there, even though the feeling itself is painful, but we are not disturbed very much. We have fair amount of patience.
That's right.
Patience is there, and we are not worried of having it, and we consider it as a kind of a blessing in a way. That it, now I have something to observe so that I can improve my mindfulness, improve my wisdom. So that kind of an attitude change has to be happen.
Yes, it does happen. And another question I have for you, Bhante, is, you know, sometimes, you know, when I sit and I do dana, panasati, and it, I know my mind has gone astray. So then I observe that it has gone astray and bring it back. And, you know, there is a bit of desire to, you know, to continue to be hopeful. And it does happen sometimes, but I'm aware of that desire. Now, is that, I mean, for me, I thought just the attempt to keep my mind on the Anapanasati and, you know, to continue to be able to do that for the whole hour, that desire, is that wholesome? Because I'm looking at it towards its desire for liberation.
Exactly.
Is that all right?
Yeah, definitely. So that is why, I mean, Buddha mentioned Chanda Iddipada.
Yes.
So, I mean, it is, so even though the practice leads us to the complete eradication of all types of desires, so immediately if we think, okay, ultimately I simply have to let go of all the desires, so I don't need to have a desire to be enlightened or be to free. So that is we are applying the theory, so applying the solution at very early stages. So that way we can't achieve. But on the other hand, Buddha says that in order to achieve the spiritual path, in order to continue one's spiritual path, there are four types of approaches one can take. Chanda Iddipada is one approach where one has a great desire, okay, I should get some benefit from this important or benefit very rare human life. There's a very opportunity, very rare opportunity now I have. So like that you have a very strong desire to become a sotapanna or something like that. So that desire is the one driving us.
Yes, I'm aware of it. So I was wondering, you know, I mean, there is. But of course, the desire I have is not, you know, full of ego or anything. It's just the understanding of the dukkha of this life and also towards the liberation. So I have that attitude. I hope it's wholesome.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. But anyway, so at the beginning, this kind of a desire is necessary for us to get encouraged, for us to continue our practice. That is the kind of a momentum we have. But anyway, as we continue our practice, so then as we continue our practice, so our goal and this desire start to evolve. It is not the same level it is maintained, but rather we, at the beginning, our practice was kind of a desire driven, we can say. But later, as our mindfulness improve, as our concentration improve, then slowly we can allow meditation to happen. Now we have less desire. I mean, we of course have to we are continuing our practice, but we have a kind of a flexibility. We are now allowing things to happen. We are allowing meditation to happen rather than we are now trying to drive it. We now have a different way of looking at it. Now everything happens and we are using whatever happens to our advantage in a way.
Right. Yes.
So now it is not desire driven practice, but rather the practice to understand desire.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you. So I'd like to invite Teacher Didwe to please ask the next question.
Thank you. Now, Bantim, I do the breath meditation and then go observe that and see the rising and passing away of the breath when I'm in a concentrated sort of situation. And then when feelings arise, I observe those also, they rise and pass away, and I also observe that and the impermanence. And then I go on to the Dhammanupassana. So I go between those three mostly without, which comes naturally. I think I don't interfere. So I think that should that be okay, Vante? I mean, I'm not sticking to one thing and going from one to another. It just happens automatically and I'm just observing. So I think, is that okay?
Yes, that is all quite all right, because we don't need to purposely stay on one, and again we don't need to purposely jump to another one either. So we have to simply allow naturally flow towards any anupassana. Now, of course, we start with kaya anupassana to the begin with, but as we develop, then we start to experience or to practice Vedana anupassana. Doesn't mind. Maybe start with kaya anupassana, then slowly, naturally switch to Vedana anupassana. Now we are mastering or simply practicing in both. Now assume that after some time, now it even tends towards the Chitta anupassana. Now we have three fields to play in a way. So kaya anupassana, Vedana anupassana, Chitta anupassana. Now all three fields are there for us to improve our mindfulness, improve our wisdom. So likewise, practice may start with from very easy to start place, but slowly we are continuing and we may switch to another section, we may improve or naturally switch to another section, another area. So it is quite all right.
Because I mostly have pleasant or neutral feelings. I mean, so far, I don't have these painful feelings. Not so strong, I think, because I don't feel so much. So so I just sort of can watch for some time, you know, Bante. And I don't know about the Chitta anupassana. It doesn't come naturally to me, I think. I don't know. So I just go through the three, the kayanu and the feelings and the dhammanu. So if the Chitta anu comes, then I suppose I can look at it. Is that right? Would that be right?
No, actually, Chitta Anupassana is fairly an early stage of Dhamma Anupassana, we can say.
Right, Bante. Okay.
So it is a bit difficult to distinguish Chitta Anupassana and Dhamma Anupassana, but Dhamma Anupassana, we can say, fairly a refined level of Chitta Anupassana, but Dhamma Anupassana also has some link towards Kaya Anupassana and Vedana Anupassana as well. Because, you know, when it comes to the Khanda Pabba, where we need to understand how different types of aggregates are arising and passing away. So that includes the body, that is the rupa aggregate, the rupa khanda, and it includes the vedana, the feelings, it includes the sanya, perception. So likewise, that's why in the Dhammanupassana section, we are in a way getting the maximum benefit of everything, we can say.
So I think Bante, you said in your talk, you said that sometimes the mind is temporarily free because we are not grasping to anything, we are observing, and maybe sometimes when you have the pleasant feelings, maybe, I don't know whether I'm grasping or not, I don't think so, but it is a pleasant feeling, which is a nice feeling anyway. But when we are going through these processes, I suppose the mind is temporarily free at a time. Would that be right if I said that?
No, that you need to verify. I mean, you need to verify. Now, when we do observation of something, say feelings, for example, some pleasurable feelings are there, say some sort of vibrations are there. So at that moment, we can't say the mind is completely free, because there is something to observe. There is something to, we are closely observing. It is necessary. But as a result of this observation, certain knowledges, certain insights are developing. So that is actually conducive to make the mind free. So at that moment, there is nothing to observe, basically. So it's a kind of an empty mind, we can say.
Mm-hmm.
Non-grasping right. mind. So nothing to observe except just be. Maintain mm-hmm. that freedom of mind.
That is when the feelings have all stopped, Bhante. Is that right? It's like you come to a level where everything is like equanimous.
Yeah, we can
say
so.
Where you don't, there's nothing to grasp anyway. Is that nothing to feel and nothing to attach on to? Would that be right?
Yeah, nothing to attach to. Actually, this at the early stages, this happens with some high concentration, because with the concentration, once sort of observing various things, how things are happening, how things are rising and passing away, and with a such improved concentration environment, one's mind get disengaged or unassociating with anything, non-grasping to anything. So but we need to maintain that concentration, because otherwise when the concentration becomes shallow, then again mind go and grasp. So concentration is very much like a bunker. Otherwise, if we come out of it, we get attacked, something like that. But slowly one's practice is to understand various grasping. Whenever mind go and grasp something, again one understand. When mind go and grasp, say, sound, we understand. Smell, we understand. Taste, we understand. So likewise, continuous understanding of this grasping helps to further refine or dilute various defilements. So that way, yeah. Even without strong concentration, one is able to maintain kind of a non-grasping mind.
So it would be good also to keep up that level of concentration when there is a period of quietness, if the breath is even fine. To go back to the breath, would that be...
Not at all.
No.
I mean,
okay,
because
okay.
You are... Now, assume that you are in the Vedana Anupassana. You are observing various feelings coming and going. And since your wisdom has improved because of that practice, assume that mind has completely let go of this grasping, this observation, and mind now wants to be free. At that time, if you purposely go and start to watch breathing, then that is wrong.
Uh-huh. So what will happen then, Bhante? You will go backwards then?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. Uh-huh. Because now the mind has the capacity to stay alone.
Uh-huh.
Stay without attaching to anything. So we need to promote that.
Okay. So then we are just waiting. There.
Exactly.
We are not going to do anything.
Do anything.
Whatever comes.
Yes.
You watch it. But
yes.
If nothing comes, again you watch it, right?
Exactly. You simply have to be. That's it.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah,
yes,
welcome.
Thank you.
And for the next question, I'd like to invite Kumudini, please.
Dewa Saranai Bhante.
Yeah.
My question is, I'm requesting some explanation about path and food, the mother color, and the Ratana Sutra talks a lot about it. I would like to please say something about path and food.
So, what the Ratana Sutra says?
Anyway, people who have mugger and the pala, they talk about so many people of. I don't know, I got. Sort of a little confused about the difference between path and fruit people. So I would like you to explain about that.
So basically, these are some controversial. There are some controversial points here because some say, according to Abhidhamma, some say this path and fruition happens immediately. But mostly the practitioners or the teachers who are more into the vipassana, into the practice side, they say the magga happens first, and after one's continuation of the magga, then the fruition happens. It is not kind of immediate, but rather after long or whatever the short or time, it depends on the individual, and then the fruition happens. So one enters the path, one recognizes the path, and then he cultivates the path, and he achieves the completion, and that is the pala, that is the fruition. So that is that I believe. So basically, I believe in that where one may recognize the path, one enters to the path, and one needs to further continue one's path. One has to further cultivate one's path. So then one may become fairly perfect in the path. One can maintain such a path for a long time. One is fairly confident about that. So on such situation, one is now, one can say one is complete in the path. So the fruition has achieved.
Then one knows that one has achieved fruition.
That actually Buddha has given a kind of a criterion to verify. So, because there are high possibility of we going wrong in these kind of areas. So therefore we should be very careful on sort of putting labels or to say that I have achieved this or I have achieved that. Because it's a kind of a very turning point in one's life and turning points in one's spiritual life. So therefore Buddha has given a kind of criterion to honestly reflect whether certain qualities are already developed in one's mind. Say for example, in the Kosambi Sutta of Majjhima Nikaya, Buddha has given six kind of reflections. And if one continuously do those reflections and continuously one feels that one has a positive answer towards all those reflections, then safely one can say, okay, I fairly is close to there at least. But still better maintain kind of a doubt rather than immediately jump into conclusions.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Bhante. Terwan Saranai.
Yeah.
And I believe for our last question, I'd like to invite Darshika to please ask directly.
Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I want to get some advice. So when I do the sitting and walking, I go into this empty space and the place is seamless. But I have observed these cases, and so one is when the pain is very mild, I can continue without taking any notice, even if the signal comes into my mind that pain has occurred. Here I don't take any my mind to the place. And continue my walking or the seated meditation in the space and watching at a distance, that when the pain is minimal. The second stage is when the pain is moderate, I get the signal to my mind that the pain has come, and here I have to go to the place where the pain is and just observe it there. And then I can come back. The third is when the pain is very severe, of course, I try to do, walking, but because the pain is severe, I have to come to the place where the pain is. And then keep looking at the process because it is severe, and I observe that the pain comes in there. Because I take it to the end, then when I take it to the end, then there is another way coming, maybe from the same place, deeper or maybe slightly different, so I observe this waveform. And maybe after a fair amount, while then I can come back to the place, to my meditation. So what I want to know is, one day, is this okay, is what I'm doing like this, when the
sequence
changes, or how would I need to
process it? Yeah, so basically if it comes to Vedananupassana, so
yes.
observing various feelings is the primary thing, but the point here is that sometimes we are not face to face with the pain or whatever feeling immediately, because we are not getting that perfect observation very easily. Say for example, pain, the feeling is there, so but we may be little late to observe it, or we may be little early to observe it, or we may didn't really observe it face to face, so that we couldn't see all the facets of the pain or feeling properly. So likewise, more and more observation has to happen till we are able to understand all various kinds of facets, behaviors pertaining to the feeling. So as you are doing, if one does not successful, maybe you are switching to another one, so that in order to recognize various facets of the feeling, doesn't matter. Now suppose at a given time you understood now that everything is very perfect. I mean everything as much as possible. Now I am able to understand the minute feelings are there. It is not a single feeling. There are many feelings are there. Everything is very vivid. So at that time, don't switch to another thing.
I only switch when there's pain. I don't really go to the place even. I just get a feeling that I got some pain and just observe it differently and continue with my meditation. But sometimes just I have a problem with my nerves and sometimes I can get very, very, very severe pain. So still I can manage to do my walking or continue to sit without changing posture. But because the pain is so severe, I try just ignoring. But when I fail, I have to come there and then I listen to the process very closely so that a long time after a while, only it changes to subside. So I wanted to know if the pain is coming to the
place that they're sitting and observing that it is okay. No, difficult to understand your question because there's a kind of a sound problem seems in your side. Anyway, as far as I could understand, we don't need to purposefully switch if everything happens properly, and it doesn't matter how long it takes because we can't control this whole process. Now, when pain happens, assume that you start to watch and we don't know when it completely disappears. So that is the non-self nature, that it has its own causes and conditions, and as because of them they start to disappear. But even though we wish it may could disappear, it may not. So rather we simply have an open attitude, simply whatever happens I am watching, that's it.
Okay.
So I don't need to control, or I don't need even to expect it to disappear, or to expect or to even to have any kind of preference. Rather, I have a very open mind, so whatever it happens, I am here to observe it as much as possible. I have a very open attitude, equanimous attitude towards whatever the type of feeling, and I am simply there and I am observing. I am getting the maximum benefit. I am trying to learn as much as possible from these feelings. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah, welcome.
Bhante, so it looks like we have another question. I'd like to invite Udanika to please ask your question.
Terwan Sanai, Bhante.
Yeah.
I have a question, which is, sometimes when I'm sitting, for example, when I'm sitting and watching TV or something, doing something with children, I feel like I am watching what they're doing and I'm watching what's happening around me, but I am looking at me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is good.
And that happens a bit too often now.
Yes. So that actually has to be improved, and that is where, I used to say, now when we do engage with various daily activities, we actually are doing that task, but at the same time we have a kind of a introspection happens to our own side, that we are watching our mind as well, even though we engage with an external activity. So that process has to happen continuously, and it may naturally develop through Hasivattana practice. So that is why in the daily practice this sampajanya is extremely important. Where it is now, say for example, when one practices anapanasati, so as much as possible we are secluded and we are preparing a kind of an artificial environment, and we want to engage in that practice. That is necessary at the beginning, but later, so the developed skills has to be incorporated to our whole life, And even when we do another activity, at the same time, we have to watch the mind, our own mind. Say, for example, when you are talking to someone, so how your mind reacts? Are you feeling any kind of emotions? Are you getting angry or that way? Even though you are in a conversation, if you are able to step back and watch the mind, how mind reacts, so that is how we have to mostly start to understand various defilements.
Yes, that's exactly what I am doing.
Yeah, that is good.
Practice.
Yeah.
But lately I find very difficult when there's few people talking to. I feel like it's a lot happening.
Mm-hmm.
And very difficult to.
Yeah.
I don't want to get involved.
This may improve basically. I mean, during a conversation, maintaining a very good, understanding or this kind of observation is also difficult. But as you improve, it becomes possible. Say, mindfulness during a conversation is one of the difficult tasks when compared to mindful listening. Say someone is talking at a distant place and some in a kind of a recording is there and you are simply listening, so that there we can say we are doing some mindful listening. But on the other hand, suppose you are face to face with another person and you are sort of in a conversation, at that time being mindfulness is comparatively difficult. And at the same time, as you said, now when there are many people are there and you are also in the conversation, at that time being mindful about such situation is even more challenging. So likewise, actually, we have to improve our mindfulness in all these different kinds of situations, and so that we can be mindful. So, and it may naturally grow, as far as I can say. You can't wish it to grow, but rather we are honestly, as we are continuing our practice, slowly our mindfulness starts to pervade. Start to enhance, to accommodate all these different situations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think so. Those are the only questions we have received. And you have anything?
Akita Dewi has another quick question. Can she ask?
Bhante, can I ask?
Yeah, we can give you 3 minutes.
Yes. No, I only got 1 minute. Bhante, you said the 6 kinds of reflections to the other lady.
Yes.
This was a sutta from the Madhumanikaya. Can you tell me which one is it? I have the book in front of me. Which number or what is it called?
Yeah, it is called Kosambi Sutta in Madhumanikaya. Yes. Kosambi Sutta. I can't remember.
It's a C, yeah?
Sorry?
Kosambi.
Kosambi.
In
Majjhima Nikaya, there Buddha explained 6 kinds of reflections, how one can know whether one is really a stream winner. So this is not that a single kind of reflection, single instance reflection that one has to use these reflections again and again very honestly. Mm-hmm. And if the answers are coming very positively, then we can be somewhat happy about that. At least I am little closer, or at least few of these are positive, something like that.
Yes, Mande, that's number 48. So it's good to have a knowledge. I mean,
yes,
we are
definitely
not trying to force anything.
Definitely.
It's not necessary, because we can see that we are improving little by little with baby steps.
Yes.
But it's good to have a little bit of understanding as well.
Correct.
Isn't it, Mande?
Correct. Very correct. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mande.
Yeah. Okay. You are welcome. So, okay, then we'll going to wind up the session. So we are listening to certain Dhamma, and again we were engaged in some discussion, and with this we are able to accumulate some merits, and we will share these merits with all the beings. Ittavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya එතාවතාචම් හේහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාචම් හේහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨාච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවානාගා මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම්පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හොන්තු ඥාතයෝ හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා හිමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු